You've mentioned before you've thought about this every day since the accident.
And I just saw like the sparks, and I just saw the whole tail rotor just like shear off. So it started spinning. And then as soon as I looked back up and I just saw dirt and rocks, and I just saw the blades hit, I went out of the aircraft and I just remember hitting dirt.
You're there on their worst day, and a lot of times you never ever get to see them again. You wonder how they are, what they're doing.
It's been 10 years since they've seen each other.
This year we have an absolutely incredible moment, something really special in store for all of you.
It's crazy to be here, our first official reconnection episode. I remember when this started, Christian and I were sitting in a small room together. I wanted to interview and create a podcast where we could provide a platform for those to share their stories of what it was like to go through that adversity and go through the recovery to see what it's doing. In 2010, I was with 75th Ranger Regiment, 2nd Battalion. I was on my third combat deployment when I was going into a compound. We were going after an IED facilitator, and he had rigged the place to explode. And when I stepped through that doorway, my life changed forever. I went from this special operations warfighter to someone who couldn't even stand on crutches anymore. So I immediately lost my sense of purpose. And it was stories that I noticed of the guys with similar experiences that would come into the hospital. And that support system was what I noticed was the most empowering, as well as hearing a story and providing that platform is what we do here. And then Christian came in with an excellent side of that as well.
Yeah, being on the rescue side, you know, my whole career, it was interesting. The concept of telling the injury stories and going through recovery and resiliency, we wanted to tell the full story. What's it like to be on the rescue side? What's it like to be the rescuer or the rescuee? And then how do we marry those two stories together and tell a comprehensive view of the entire thing?
It resonates with the audience on a whole different level. You don't have to be in the military for these stories to resonate with you. You could be a civilian that is going through your own traumas, and seeing the strength in other people inspires you to take that extra step forward. To see it come together like this in such a successful and impactful way has been an absolute honor on my end. Thank you guys so much for opening up.
Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely.
What inspired you to join the military?
It's actually a very funny story. It's 2 days after Christmas, and my best friend called me up, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing today?" And I'm like, "Nothing, what are you doing?" He said, "Let's go join the National Guard." And I said, "Okay, let's go." And we went and joined, you know.
Just there on the spot?
On the spot. No thought whatsoever.
You didn't think
know.
About it at all before
no,
this?
No. It was this, okay, let's go.
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
Yeah. So.
And what year was this?
1988. We went and saw the recruiter, and the recruiter's like, "Hey, what do you want to know?" And we're like, "Where do we sign at?" He goes, "I don't know how to do this." And we're like, "We want to join up, you know?" And he's like, so when can you go to basic? And we're like, "Today."
Later he said, today.
He said, "I can't make that happen. You got to go to MELPS first, you know?"
Sure.
So yeah. I'm like, "We can go today." He goes, "Can't make that happen." He made a call and he goes, "Can you go tomorrow?" We're like, "Sure." You know, we went to the MELPS the next day, done our physicals, swore in, you know, and
yeah.
A week later we was headed to Fort Knox. My dad was military. My stepdad was military. I had one uncle done 3 tours in Vietnam, another uncle done 2 tours in Vietnam, you know.
Did you know what you wanted to do, or you just kind of fell into 68?
Well, originally I went in as a Bradley mechanic. Hated being a mechanic. I'm not a mechanic. So, but on the civilian side, I went to EMT school and paramedic school, and then actually got out of the Guard for like 3 months, and they taught me I'm going back in as a 68 Whiskey, and rest is history. In 2011, I got offered an E7 slot to go to medevac unit. When they called and offered me the E7 slot, they're like, "Hey, before you say yes or no, we are deploying to Afghanistan, and you will be eligible to be deployed, you know." I'm like, "Okay, I'll take it, you know."
So how quickly did you find yourself being deployed to the Middle East?
I went in to Iraq in November of 04. I went in by ground. Most of our guys, they flew in on Chinooks to the FOB we were going to, but a certain number of us went on convoy, you know, so we went up Route Tampa.
Okay.
You know, and I'm riding an LNTV that's got sandbags on the floor, and I got a quarter-inch piece of sheet metal in the window, you know, and that was my up armor, you know, so.
That's your armor for the day.
Yeah, that's my armor for the day, you know, so.
And you're probably, this paramedic training, you know, has helped you keep cool, calm, and collective while moving on, and that experience has definitely amped you up a little bit.
So the training come in really, really well. Our squadron lost 6 people on that deployment.
Okay, so was a heavy deployment
for
you. Yeah,
it was, yeah.
And the first one.
Yes.
So that had to be extremely eye-opening.
It was, yeah.
Was there any mental preparation before that, or was it just like, this is real, now I'm feeling it?
It's like, this is real, now I'm feeling it, you know?
Yeah. So 2012 is the deployment where shit just goes crazy from there.
You know, we knew we were going to be busy, but nobody had any idea how busy or exactly what we would be doing, you know? My medevac unit, probably 75% of them had never deployed before. We were there to support Tossies. They were going to raid a Taliban training camp, you know. Of course, I mean, we first got in country. Every time a helicopter flies, it gets shot at, you know. When we're there for it, it's zero moon, you know, which it's extremely dark in Afghanistan. So
good for ground, bad for pilots.
Yeah, you know, so zero illumination, you know, and so the night it kicked off, we're actually sitting in operations tent of the SF compound. We found out it was Marine Huey that had crashed. Of course, we're going to a place we'd never been to, you know. We had to climb to like 13,000 foot to get through a mountain pass. Of course, we got our takedown. And our first attempt to land, at about 50 foot, we had a complete brownout. And he just slammed us on the ground. 15 seconds, we're sitting there, you know. And so they come with the 4 Marines, and of course, Ryan was on the stretcher.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Excited to have you here. So we're going to dive right in to one of the most favorite questions we have, and what inspired you to join the military?
I was a military brat, so dad was in the Air Force, grandfather, so to speak, was in the Marines. I knew from being a little kid running around in the woods, sticks, guns, that I was destined to go in the military.
So Marines you always knew? Or?
Yeah. So everything that I did in Civil Air Patrol was like connection to my dad and, you know, somehow. So I decided to kind of, you know, look back towards my grandfather, lean towards the Marines to get out from under my dad's shadow, but kind of go aviation to honor my dad. So there's a way to kind of hit up the legacy of both of them and keep it going. All it took was my dad to go, "You'll never make it, you're too stubborn," and that is like, "I will prove you wrong," and the rest is history. Signed up and left back where I was living at the time, backwoods North Carolina, out in the mountains, kind of by Tennessee, kind of by Georgia. Yeah. Flashing yellow light, you know, it was like, "Hey, get a job bagging groceries and get married and move in the trailer park," and that was the start of your life. I was like, or I just leave. There you go. "Hey, would you like to be air crew?" Like, "What's that?" "Well, you shoot guns and stuff out of helicopters." Like, "Yeah. Marine Corps got helicopters?" Like, "Yeah, man, that sounds good. Like, can you swim?" Like, "Yeah, I grew up swimming. Like, I can do that." And they're like, "Okay, we're gonna be this first prototype group that comes through." First time I deployed was in 93. So I got to the fleet right out of school. I'll say this forever, like, the Marine aviation is support the guys on the ground. So when they need close air support, we'll make it work for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's your job is to be there when they need air support. If they call in for it, you're there. The first time that there was a training mishap right before we deployed, where we lost quite a number of crew right before our last deployment, and that was pretty hard.
Yeah. That's a hard one with the training mishaps and training losses. It's hard to find a reason why.
We lost 7 crew members, right?
Right before you deploy again. So that's got to be fresh in your mind.
That's February 22nd. We deployed in April. Deployed kind of with a heavy heart, you know, and our goal was to, you know, hey, at this point, get everyone home. That's really all you can do, kind of shepherd around everyone. I don't think anyone had really processed anything because you're in that deployment cycle where you're getting ready to go. So everyone kind of puts a pin in the grieving, you know, and they carry that into deployment of maybe some deployment patches. Hey, we'll wear every flight and kind of take them with us because they all deserve to be there. There was only, I think, three or four of us that had ever deployed before. So we had gotten named up. And I just remember, you know, hearing about it the night before and kind of briefing some objections to the plan. I wasn't a fan of it, but at the end of the day, those are your marching orders. Like,
yeah.
And I remember like going home and sleeping really well. I woke up and I was like, this is one of those days, like, I really need to have my A game, like, plus. So I just remember changing in PT gear and going for like a 9-mile run at like 11 at night around the airfield just to clear my head. Well, kind of like calm. It was really, really calm. Like I remember just like cool night. We go out and, you know, we're going to the objective area and we're flying around. There's like sporadic fire, you know, coming up in the area. Hey, it's not effective. You know, they're just shooting up at the noise, and just, the brownout came in really quick. It just enveloped from the rear. And I was like, you know, at this point, I was like, hey, motor forward, because I started losing, you know, any kind of visibility outside the aircraft. And then all of a sudden, I just started feeling like I was going back against the rear transmission wall, which meant that we were nose up. And I just see these boulders that are about the size of Volkswagens. And then I just, you know, I was like, tail, and I was like, level it out. And I just saw like the sparks, and I just saw the whole tail rudder just like shear off. So it started spinning, and I just see Nate Merv kind of got the door, reached out and grabbed them and like pulled them back up in the aircraft. And like as far as I could. And then as soon as I looked back up and I just saw dirt and rocks, and I just saw the blades hit. I went out of the aircraft and I just remember hitting dirt. You know, you hear the helicopter and all that, and then it takes your mind a minute to wrap around what just happened. And then I just remember looking back up and it like the helicopter kind of rolling over. And I was like, oh, I'm attached to it. Just flipping me up in the air over that and like rolling over on him. It was on top of me. I flattened out and I couldn't breathe because my diaphragm was pulled so tight. And I just remember like I need to get my gunner's belt off because there was so much tension. It was like, you know, I got a breath, but I was like face down in the dirt. And I just thought, this is it.
We first got a report. So they told us it was a Marine Huey that had crashed and there was four Marines on board. At that point, we're all running to the aircraft to get ready to do the medevac mission. We're all really nervous. We're trying to game plan exactly what we're going to do when we get there, how bad the injuries are, what we might see, not see. It took us about 7 or 8 minutes to get to the LZ where the crash was. It's as dark a night as you can possibly have to do the mission.
Kind of like tried to move, tried to scream, tried to do anything, just nothing would come out. And then I just remember seeing like this high-speed hiking boot just stop. And I just like reached out and grabbed it.
Ryan actually dug himself out and got the other three Marines out of the aircraft before he went down.
I just remember, you know, them pulling me out and they're like, hey, you know, what's wrong? You know, it's like my back's really weird. Nothing was working below my sternum.
Yeah, I started working on Ryan, triaging Ryan, and I had another medic with me. And she started triaging the others as well.
As soon as I was in and my body is going, hey, you're safe, you know, it was, the body just sort of just shuts down at that point. And I think I just passed out.
Especially as a flight medic, you're there on their worst day, and a lot of times you never, ever get to see them again. You wonder how they are, what they're doing.
I still think about it every day. It's been 12 years, and first thing I think about when I wake up, it's the last thing I think about when I go to bed. That blurry face, there's someone who probably, you know, big part of saving your life, and it was like, is this ever going to happen?
I was watching a hunting show on TV. Ryan started speaking, and he was talking about what happened and how he was in a helicopter crash, and he told the date, and I'm like, wait a minute, I was the one who flew that guy.
In my head, I've done this scenario 1,000 times, what I would say. Do I cry? Do I babble?
Be a whole whirlwind of emotions going through my head, but it's going to be really good to see somebody that actually made a difference in their life. An opportunity for me to close that chapter when I picked Ryan up.
I mean, it was really important that I go back and just say thank you.
Hey, we're here tonight at Beats and Eats, and tonight is the night we get to connect Bernie and Ryan for the first time in over 10 years. Couldn't be more excited about this. What a wonderful event. Come on inside. Just showed up at Beats and Eats. We're about to have a fabulous night reconnecting him with the rescuer after 10 years.
A lot of anxiety, a lot of apprehension, but I'm stoked. I've been waiting for this for a long time, so a lot of people I've wanted to thank, and this is certainly a dream come true, one to close the loop, and I'm very, very fortunate and very grateful.
Feeling good. Very excited. Of course, I flew him 11 years ago. And I made a difference in his life, and he actually made a difference in mine. So, really looking forward to it.
So we are currently in the green room backstage.
So nervous.
So Ryan is about to meet Bernie for the first time since the last time they met in the back of a helicopter. So he's really excited to see what happens next.
Yeah, it was a little dark. Not a very good night for conversation. So, I've been thinking about this for a long time.
This year we have an absolutely incredible moment, something really special in store for all of you. Right here on this very stage, we're going to reunite two veterans. Ryan, his helicopter crashed, and it changed his life forever. Bernie is the heroic medevac medic who saved his life.
It's been 10 years since they've seen each other. Ryan, coming out here.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about the last time you saw Bernie. Do you remember that?
So last time I saw Bernie was in the back of a helicopter. I was trying to keep my wits about me and obviously not cry in front of an Army guy.
So if Bernie were here right now, what would you say to him?
I would say to him in the last 10 years, hopefully I was worthy of the effort, not only for himself and his crew put forward to put their lives on the line to come get little old me. I've thought about that every day, to be an engaged father, to be an engaged husband, and to pay it forward every day.
Let's do this. Bernie, coming out. You put your life on the line to save a fellow serviceman.
Yes, sir. It was a real honor to pick up a fellow soldier.
These guys here are what it's all about. This right here is why you're all here tonight.
I really appreciate being here. It's very meaningful to me personally. It really is. As a guy that's been on the other end, a guy like you, two triceps, two hips, two shoulders, I'm still doing the stupid stuff. So thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
So I appreciate you. And who are you?
This is my wife, Jennifer.
Very nice to meet you. You know you got a hero there, right? He will never say that because that's not who he is. But this guy and many others, he changed lives.
Don't ever forget that.
No, I don't think you remember. I don't think you feel that. Because it's a job.
It's more than a job.
What is it?
It's actually a passion. I really want to make a difference in people's lives. You know, so.
See this guy here, Big Marine?
Yeah.
He made a difference in his life. And by that, he made a difference in my life. And 400 people sitting in that room. It's a huge difference. I've been saved by medics. So, it's a big deal to me.
It's huge for me.
Whatever you need, let me know, okay?
Wow, I can't believe 12 hours ago, we were sitting on stage with the Medevac reconnection, and here we are. What a moment to just have you guys reconnect on stage. How did you feel about that?
You know, it was an incredible moment for me, finally getting to meet Ryan when he was upright, you know, because the last time I saw him, he was on a stretcher, you know, on the floor pan of the aircraft, so.
I think that's a crazy moment to see the before and after. Oftentimes we see those that are injured, and you don't think about the absolute mess it is, right? There's dirt everywhere, you're busted and broken, and then seeing you walk onto stage like that, you know, that's incredibly amazing.
Yeah, and for me it was surreal because it's sort of, you know, those movie recreations where it's fade in and fade out of faces. And that's a really different situation. Like I think anyone who's active duty military, you go in, you're used to kind of being in charge of things and know what you're doing and giving direction. And when you're kind of laying there being treated on one, it's completely something that you're alien to. And then you're also trying to assess at that time how bad it is. Besides a helmet and a couple faces, you know, I didn't remember much. I remember it was dark, but like I said in the interview, I don't remember a whole lot. So putting a face to it was actually really cool for me.
So this is something that you've thought about, obviously. You've mentioned before, you've thought about this every day since the accident.
Yeah, I still do. It's like part of my regimen. One, my back's like still really bad amongst other things. So I get up and lay flat on the hard floor and kind of do some stretches. And I mean, I think about it, and it's one of the things that probably helped me get through rehabilitation was, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm in pain. People died. Like, I want to curl up in a ball and push the world away. And then, you know, guys like Bernie strapping on a Blackhawk and going out in the dark and doing those dangerous things to do it. And then, you know, all the healthcare professionals that treated me that I could, there's no way I could go meet them all and say thank you, but you can get up every day. And so that's been like the driving force of why I'm still not laying somewhere.
Curious how it was when you got up this morning. Did you have different thoughts this morning? Had that process or that thought process changed?
Yeah, it was kind of like a long exhale, you know? It was like finally met him, finally got to tell him and, you know, give him something that was sentimental to me and, you know, just say thank you face to face. It's been the first time I've ever been able to thank someone directly involved with, you know, my recovery. So like that was pretty epic for me.
Now, Bernie, when we last spoke, you mentioned several times that this is just another day in the life of being a medic.
I mean, it is, but you know, I take my medic job seriously, so I do more than just as a job, you know?
Yeah, and it's compartmentalized right for you. But when you're on stage and you're actually connecting with someone that you rescued a decade ago, does that bring it home? Does that make it feel a little bit more real? Does it validate your...
Yeah, it, I actually got to see that my work somewhat paid off. You know, I mean, I can't take all the credit for saving Ryan, you know, but I was there for him on his worst day, and I got to make a difference in his life. And actually, seeing him on the stage, you know, made me feel really good inside.
Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. And you shared something very personal with him as well on this stage, and that was your wings.
It did. So so for Marines, when we become air crewmen, you get gold naval air crew wings. And when you get your first ones, and I got mine in Iraq in 03, the first ones you get, that's, you have them for the rest of your life. It's very, very sentimental. So I thought it would be appropriate to pass those off to Bernie yesterday in a kind of a quiet moment of something that probably the most sentimental thing I own right now that oddly enough had been recovered from that crash site. It was in my helmet bag with a flag that, you know, I'd given to my dad. And when he passed away, I took it on every mission. And I was terrified that both were lost that night, but they were ended up recovered and sent back.
What was your reaction when you got those?
I was kind of overwhelmed, actually, you know, caught me off guard. I know how sentimental the wings are, you know, and it's probably one of the nicest gestures I've ever had anybody do for me, you know. So Marine almost got to see an Army guy cry, so, you know, but
I think these reconnections are so important because they bring an overarching view of the entire story. Oftentimes, we just have pieces of what happens in the military. And with this event, you guys got to finalize all the stories that were missing in your life. How does that feel to get that kind of closure?
It's weird when you have a blank spot in your life. You know, you look in your timeline, and from like 2012, you know, late August to basically January of 2014 was just blank. I don't remember much. My long-term memory was pretty, still is damaged. I don't remember much before the Marine Corps.
The medic part of it, it's just a job I do every day, but just getting to what brief moments I had with Ryan and getting to take care of him, you know, and I always wondered what happened to him. And when you fly a medevac, a lot of times you don't even get a patient's name, you know, so it's really hard to follow up and find out what happened. And then it gave me a lot of closure, just being able to meet Ryan and know that he's actually doing well, you know, and our mission was successful in that aspect. So
obviously this was a really unique day for both of you, and to have that closure on both sides, it brings that whole story around. What do you think this is going to do for you in the future? I mean, it's got to be impactful. Does it inspire you to reach out more, to help fellow veterans? How does it make you feel?
For me, I think one I've always tried to do, and I mentioned it last night, is continuing to pay it forward, you know, taking every kind gesture and doing as much as I can to outreach, not necessarily to help and provide and give things, but more like to be there and really through the rough times, you know, sometimes those hard talks that are needed. Compared to the, I think a lot of us veterans, especially the ones that have been wounded in some capacity, people tend to treat us with kid gloves. You can go, hey, everything's okay, you're a hero, you're this, you hear all that. It's really easy to start feeling sorry for yourself. What we do is tend to isolate ourselves by torpedoing our home life, just being engaged enough at a good level. So, I mean, I'll pay this forward for the rest of my life. And like I said, the big thing for me is showing people while I'm still alive how I feel about them. You know, I don't want to ever take anything to the grave and Bernie not know exactly how I feel about them.
For me, it's actually inspired me a lot to reach out to fellow veterans. And actually, the last couple of weeks, I've reached out to some I flew with that I've not talked to and 7 or 8 years, you know.
So it inspired more reconnections,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah.
Do you think that it empowers you, kind of this reconnection a little bit? So it seems to me like we're talking about being re-inspired to re-engage and reach out, maybe help a little bit more. Is that what this event does?
Yes.
Yeah, for me it definitely does. Not only with Bernie, but you know, even some of the crew on my aircraft from that night, I still really haven't talked to. That was sort of my, in 20 years of aviation, that was the last event in that squadron. I never went back. You know, I kind of went back to the hospital, say, and then transferred over to Wounded Warrior Battalion. So I never really got that closure. And I think I was like the abnormal part of my recovery because I was with IED blast survivors. I was with gunshot wound survivors, and I was the squishy guy, you know, over in the corner. So I never really got the reconnect. So I've kind of started reaching out to some of them too.
What do you hope that this does, that this reconnection does for other people for the future? What do you hope that the audience gets out of a story like this?
I hope it will encourage others to reach out like I did to Ryan and try to reconnect.
Sometimes it just takes a little push into the right direction, and it's got to be so, like I said, so empowering, but so healing to be able to close that out in your life. Now you know the whole story. Now you also could take that extra leap forward.
It's made me address that and look at it and go, okay, yeah, that was, again, it was terrible, but here I am. And it's kind of like a good, nice closure for me.
I feel like there's a lot of people who were injured and they remain broken. What have you done to break that cycle, to go from I'm broken to I was injured?
I think for me, it's a conscious effort every day. And that's, I told you, I start my regimen every day of just laying there stretching out and not wanting to be that, take that victim mentality, you know, that out of your career, 25 years of going, that one day is not going to define me. You can definitely take it, put it down as a foundation of what built you, but I've never taken any pride of going, oh, I'm going to be identified by that one day. Like a tombstone, there's some dates on it. Those dates really don't mean anything. It's all that time in between. So what have you done to make the best out of that? And for me, it's always important to pay it forward, to reach out to what I can, because I have that second chance. And you know, some people say it's survivor's guilt, and I've talked to people that were in similar boats to me. I don't know if it's survivor's guilt. I don't think so. Not anymore. I think that was a phase. It's not a phase anymore. For me, it's just trying to do the good work that other people do, those countless faces that were there when you needed them. And I just want to be one of those ghost faces in someone else's timeline.
You also represent a larger group, right? The military, the veteran community. And you give a voice to that. And there's so many out there that are so thankful for that, including myself.
Ryan and Bernie, thank you guys very much for coming all the way out here, for making this event happen. This was really special for us as well, watching you guys cross that stage and shake hands and hug for the first time in over a decade was truly inspirational for us on this side of the table. So we want to thank you guys for coming out. And everybody who has supported this event and brought everything together, do you have anything to say to them?
I'd really like to thank you guys so much. The Robert Urban Foundation, you know, for bringing us here, which was way more than I ever dreamed of.
You have no idea how something so insignificant can mean so much to someone you probably doesn't even think noticed what you did. It's noticed.
I appreciate every bit of it.
Well, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. And thank you to Robert. I mean, Robert and his foundation are phenomenal.
It is just absolutely incredible. Thank you guys so much for opening up, and you always have a friend in me, and definitely at the Robert Irvine Foundation.